To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We're shipping Father's Day gifts with a rapid-fire round of questions. Ready?
Yes, my gift. Can you pack it?
Yep.
Ship it?
Yes.
Guarantee it?
Of course.
Oh, send a set of golf clubs.
Oh, hole in one.
Protect electronics? Dogproof it? Return it if they hate it?
Yes, no, and yeah.
Are you the UPS store?
Hey, we have a winner!
Woo!
Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, prices, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Visit a store today.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Gloria Gaynor, giving you the story behind the song on Consequence. At first I was afraid, I was petrified.
Welcome, listeners, to The Story Behind the Song. I'm your host, Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media. Okay, this is one interview I've wanted to do for a long, long time. In this very special episode, and just in time for her new music and tour, I'm joined by the great Gloria Gaynor, the queen of disco herself, to discuss the journey behind one of the most iconic and universal songs of all time. Yes, I Will Survive. Released in 1978 at the tail end of the disco era, Gaynor, who had already had a number of major hits, chose this song because she immediately knew it would be massive because of its universal themes of empowerment. But here's the thing. Her music label didn't. They slotted I Will Survive to be the B-side for the song Substitution, which they had slotted to be the A-side. But Gaynor, trusting her instincts and feeling the song's magic, did her own substitution and slipped it to the DJs at the famed Studio 54 nightclub in New York City, and the rest, as they say, is history. Gloria lays it all out in fascinating detail, all the twists and turns throughout her life and musical journey, and all the little-known stories of one of the most iconic recordings of all time in this very candid and uplifting interview. So grab your glitter, strap on your roller skates, and forget all your cares in the world as we dive deep into the story behind Gloria Gaynor's great anthem of hope and empowerment, I Will Survive. Gloria, I've had over 60 of these interviews now with great music icons, and I got to tell you, this is one of the ones that I'm most excited about. I've wanted to interview you for a long, long time, and this is the first time I've worn a collared shirt because I feel like I'm going out on nightlife listening to your great music. So I'm excited to it. And then one other thing, just today I saw, as we record this for everybody out there, you have a major feature story about you in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Very exciting. So good for you. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You've had a number of smash hits over the years. Probably one of the first ones was Never Can Say Goodbye, which is such a wonderful song itself. But you know, 50 plus year career, you're touring, you have a major tour that's ongoing, you have new music that's going to be coming out very, very shortly. Mm-hmm. And just want to see, like, how do you feel after, you know, doing it for a number of different decades and now you're going on tour again? What's your state of mind like? How are you feeling about things?
I feel great. I feel that I've accomplished a lot of what I set out to accomplish and some things I didn't even set out to accomplish. And that things are going great for me. I am just enjoying my career. I'm enjoying my life. And life is good for me right now.
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear. There's so much activity. You have also a recent biopic, a recent documentary. You have a couple different books. It's like you've done all these things and you continue to tour, and your tour, from what I understand, has a 10-piece orchestra. So this is a big tour.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. It's comfortable for me. It's fun for me. It's fun for the group, and it's fun for the audience. I feel like if we're having fun on stage, the audience will have fun, and that's the ultimate objective, that they enjoy the show.
Yeah. I think with your music, there's no way not to have fun. But before we dig into the song, Gloria, I wanted to get into just how you got started into music in the first place. If you could just tell me a little bit about your musical journey from, you know, a young girl growing up on the East Coast, and what your first big break was getting into music itself, getting into singing first before then recording. How did that all happen?
Well, it was, I call it a God setup, because I was working at a regular job as a sales auditor. And I became friends with a girl, and she got married, got pregnant. I became her daughter's godmother. And one day while I was on my first day of vacation, she called to tell me that she was having trouble with her babysitter and that she was in need of someone to take the babysitter's place. So I said, well, you know, I'm not going anywhere for my vacation. You have 2 weeks to get somebody else or get her back. So I went over to babysit for her, and the first day that I was there, I heard somebody walking in the apartment upstairs. Now, backstory, I have five brothers who sang, not professionally, but they sang around the neighborhood and school and all of that. But I wasn't allowed to sing with them, and they didn't even know I could sing because I was a girl. They weren't interested in me at all. And so I just wanted somebody to hear me sing. When I heard the footsteps in the apartment upstairs, every day, I would follow the footsteps, and when the footsteps would stop, I would stop and sing. And I did that every day for the 2 weeks that I was working, babysitting for her, because I just wanted somebody to hear me sing. A couple of weeks later, my brother and I go to the movies, and on the way back to go home, we pass by a movie, a nightclub, and I said to my brother, I know this group, that there was a billboard. And I said, I've heard about this group. I've heard they're really good. Let's go in and see them. So we did. And while I'm sitting there, they play a song that I know, and I'm humming it to myself, not where anyone could hear me, but I'm humming it to myself. And soon someone goes up on the stage and says, ladies and gentlemen, there's a young lady in the audience. She has a wonderful voice. Her first name is Gloria. We don't know her last name, but if we give her a good round of applause, maybe we can get her up to sing a song. So at first I was afraid, I was petrified. But I went up with my brother coaxing me. I went up and told them that they asked me what song I wanted to sing. And of course I chose the one that they had played earlier, and I was singing in my seat because I knew I could sing it in the key that they were playing it in. And so I sang this song, got a standing ovation. They came over to me afterwards and asked me to perform with them. Come to find out that the owner of the club was the person whose footsteps I'd been listening to and singing to for 2 weeks. And he recognized me when I came in, because my girlfriend had called me one day when I was leaving. She called me out the window, and he saw my face when I turned around to respond to her. So he knew my face, he knew my name. And when he saw me come into the club, he called me up, and I call that a God setup. I started performing with them the very next night and never looked back.
That's amazing. You know, there are so many times when I do these interviews and there's this kind of serendipitous moment, which and how life works out that way. Mm. And had you not been singing in the apartment when the footsteps stopped,
right,
then who knows what would have happened?
Exactly.
It's pretty incredible, Gloria. Yeah. And at that time, as a young girl, you were born Gloria with a different last name, Fowles, Gloria Fowles. And so in my research, I wasn't able to see how you came up with Gaynor. Can you just tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I had done my first recording and was getting ready to be released with Johnny Nash on his Josita label. And he said to me, you know, Gloria Fowles is not a stage name. He says people won't be able to pronounce it. They won't spell it properly. And it just doesn't work. I said, okay. He says, I think you should use a name that starts with G, because then your friends will call you Gigi, your fans will call you Gigi. They'll give you a nickname. I said, okay, that's fine, but I don't know any names that start with G. He said, well, let me see. There's Gaynor. I said, that's good.
That's pretty good that his first pick was Gaynor.
Yep.
That's wild. That's a fascinating story. Getting into the recordings, if you were playing at this club, and you talked a little bit about being in a recording session, you needed a name. But what was the big break that got you into the recording studio in the first place?
I was at a nightclub one night and with a friend of mine and found out that they were having a contest. And I can't remember what the prize was, but there was a contest. And I decided to join the contest. Dionne Warwick was one of the people that was in the contest. And her soon-to-be husband was playing drums. And she sang a beautiful song. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to beat her, I don't want to try to compete with her voice. I'm going to compete by making the audience have fun. So I sang a song called Something's Got a Hold on Me. And it was a very popular song, and everybody was singing it with me. And, of course, I won the contest.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
So come to find out, there were two guys in the audience who were already recording with Johnny Nash's label, and they came over to me and took me, they thought I was great, and they wanted to introduce me to Johnny Nash. And so the next day, it wasn't the next day, it was Saturday, that Monday, we went to Johnny Nash's, they took me over to New York to meet him, and he liked my voice and recorded me.
That's a hell of a contest. I tell you, those who were in the audience there, what an insane moment looking back after just a short period of time, because then both of you took off huge, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's pretty amazing. So thanks for taking us on that little tour. And so there's a lot of life that happens before you get into the studio for your album on which I Will Survive is featured, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But let's go into that moment in time. This is 1978, and you've had a couple of albums under your belt already. Mm-hmm. What was your headspace like? What was the feeling that you had as you went into the studio this time? How did you feel just as an artist and just about life in general and what was going around in the zeitgeist?
Well, I had fallen on stage. Falling backwards over a monitor and finished my show and went home that night, went out to breakfast with the band. And then I went home that night, went to bed and woke up the next morning paralyzed from the waist down. Ended up in hospital for 3 months, had a major surgery on my spine, left the hospital not knowing what was going to happen, but praying profusely that God would take over and do something. And so I got a call from the record company saying that they were not renewing my contract.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, this is not what I wanted.
Right.
So hopefully you've got a better plan. You've got another plan. Well, what happened was they got a new president over from England, where I happened to be popular, and he found out that I was on the label and wanted me to record a song that he'd had a hit with in England and sent me out to California to record that song. And so, in fact, they did renew my contract, sent me out to California to record the song that he had chosen. And when I got there, I asked the producers what would be the B-side. And they said, well, we don't know what kind of songs do you like. I said, I like songs that are, uplifting, encouraging, have really good lyrics and melody. They said they had a little powwow about it. And then they came back and said, we think you're the one we've been waiting for to record this song that we wrote 2 years ago. So I always felt that God said, look, sit down, write a song, hold on to it. I'm going to send you somebody.
Yeah.
When I read the words, I said, what are you, stupid? You're going to put this on the B-side? This is a hit lyric. I'm sitting here relating my spine surgery to this song. I'm also relating the fact that my mother passed away just a few years ago, something I never thought I'd survive. Everybody's going to relate to this song, whatever they're going through, and hoping they'll overcome, hoping they'll survive. And they said, well, no, that's the deal we made. I said, well, if it's less to me, it won't stay on the B-side. So we brought it back to New York and took it to the record company, and they wouldn't listen to it.
Wow.
So we waited until the song was CDs were printed. We got a box of them, took them to Studio 54, had the DJ there play them, and the audience stormed the dance floor. The first time they heard it, I'm like, okay, I am absolutely right about this song, because New York jaded audiences don't immediately respond to anything. And so this is obviously a hit. So we gave him the box of CDs and told him to give them to his friends around New York, his DJ friends. And he did that. They began to play it. People began to request it. And then they began to call the radio stations asking for it, because now they want to hear it on the way to work in traffic and all the other craziness that goes on throughout your day. And so, you know, they had to finally re-release it with I Will Survive as the A-side.
How about that? Okay, so there's so many different pieces in there that you were talking about. The record label was going to drop you, and then this all happened where you are called back into the studio to record this song, and the song you were going to record, the A side, which was called Substitute,
right?
And the B side was this throwaway song. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that's what they were saying. It's a throwaway song, right? But you immediately saw the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And was that even before the melody itself? You just saw the lyrics?
Right.
Okay. So you saw the lyrics and immediately you saw the power of those lyrics.
Exactly.
That's amazing. And so Gloria, the songwriters, their names were Freddie Perren. Is that right? Freddie Perren and Dino?
Dino Ficaris.
Dino Ficaris. So this song is such a classic song that, and we're going to get into the empowerment of it all,
mm-hmm.
you know, the empowerment, but it's from a female perspective, mm-hmm. about a, you know, a woman who's wronged by her lover. And
yeah.
This is Freddie and Dino who wrote this song.
Right.
Did you ever talk to them about where those lyrics came from?
I did. And I honestly don't remember. I remember it wasn't what I was thinking. Dino had written a song from an experience that he had, and I can't remember what he said the experience was, because it was so far removed from how I saw it.
Okay, got you. But when they showed that song to you, mm-hmm. and you were going to record the A side and the B side, how long did it take you to grasp the melody of it all and make it your own before you started recording that?
No, it was immediately. It was immediate.
Yeah, is that just a gift that you've always had when you had a song?
I guess. I don't know. I never thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah. but going into a studio like that, you know, you were a pro already. You had done it so many times. But going in, you saw the power of this song. From mm-hmm. the recording session itself, tell me a little bit about that, if you recall what that was like in the studio. And you were still having the, you know, the fight that this is the A side, not the B side. But tell us how that was.
Well, it was great, because they were kind of recording it as the B side and I was recording it as the A side. and putting my heart and soul into it, and which was really quite easy, because I was feeling it. I was living it. I was standing there in a back brace, living this song.
Yeah.
So it was really relatively easy for me to put all of that emotion into it and everything, because I was living it.
Was it always written that way, where you have the introduction where you're just essentially a cappella and then the music kicks in?
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And mm-hmm. and because it was going to be the B-side,
mm-hmm.
what I understand is that, and for everybody out there, it was a very short recording session, and the recording, since it was going to be the B-side, was really short, right? So it's not like there were multiple takes on this.
No, there weren't a lot of takes on it. And I mean, I part of that was because they weren't thinking of it as the A-side, and part of it because I really didn't need that much time to get into it. I was into it from the minute I read it.
Yeah, I mean, and then you were talking about how you gave the records out to Studio 54 and everybody coming out of the dance floor, and you kind of had that in your mind that as soon as people saw the, felt the power of it. But what did that feel like as an artist who's already had some great success, but seeing people flocking to it in that way, just your overall sense?
It was amazing. It was so validating, you know, and just inspiring to me, because I realized that there were going to be so many outlets and so many avenues through which I was going to be able to get to people's hearts and souls with this song, not only with my performances, but with the recording, with them playing it for themselves, with them hearing it in clubs, with them hearing it on radio. There's so many avenues through which I was going to be able to reach the people with this message that I found so profound for my own life, and thought that it was going to be that for everybody else.
Did you, and given the power of it, when did it really hit you when you saw audiences react to it, that this was a song that was of empowerment, and, you know, for women, for the LGBTQ plus community, but for everybody in general? But when did that really sink into you that different communities who listened to it, it really struck them and it really hit a nerve with them?
Well, of course, it happened as I performed for these different audiences.
Yeah.
You know, around the city, around the country, and around the world. It got such momentum. And with each different race, creed, nationality, age group, you know, it was resonating. And as I was going around performing it, and as I was, as it was being played on radio, and as I'm hearing from people from fan mail, and, you know, just having people call in as I'm doing interviews on radio or television, whatever, you know, I was coming to understand just how big this song was and just how right I was about the effect that it was going to have, the power that it had.
Can you imagine the music the label executives who said, no, that's going to stay the B-side, right?
Yeah, I can imagine them. I know what they were doing. I know what they were saying. Yeah. Yes, I knew that. Yes, that was my pick. Uh-huh, yeah, I knew that. Yeah. It would be a great, sure.
Right. They're taking credit for it now, you know, after
absolutely.
All these decades.
Absolutely.
Another one that, and there's so many different groups, like you said, who are just feel so empowered. All of us feel empowered. But that I thought one that was really interesting was the French World Cup 1998. So the World Cup winners,
it became
the anthem to the team and to the country as they were watching all that. So that must have been fascinating too.
That was fascinating. That was something I never expected. I never thought about that. That never came to mind. But when they came to me and told me how it happened, how they were using this song to spur them on to victory, it was fascinating for me, and it was such a compliment and so encouraging for me.
So so Gloria, when you think about all these experiences, you've had so many, but is there anything that sticks out particularly to you when you of an audience or a moment singing that song that stuck out compared to all others just because it was profound for you?
Well, the one that I almost always speak of is a young lady came to me. I had changed the lyrics to the song. I had become very serious about my faith and had changed the lyrics to say, instead of it saying, it originally said, "It took all the strength I had not to fall apart." And I changed it to say, "Only the Lord could give me strength not to fall apart." And then where it says, "Now you see me somebody new," I said, "'Cause he made me somebody new." And I sang those new lyrics for the first time in public in Italy, in a show in Italy. And after the show, as people always come to me for autographs and to say hello and tell me how they enjoy the show and all that, this young Asian girl came to me, and I will never forget her. And she said, "You changed my life." So I'm thinking, you know, here's a young lady who, you know, got up the courage to leave an abusive relationship, you know, something like that. And she says, no, I've been living here for almost a year, and it's been really, really hard for me. And so I was going to go home so I could commit suicide.
Oof.
But now that I've heard this song, I know where my strength can come from, and I don't have to die. And I mean, she and I were hugging and crying, and, you know, I would never, ever, ever forget that moment. And I think to myself all the time, if I only change those lyrics for her, then that's enough.
Yeah. Wow. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah. That was incredible.
My whole family, my wife, my two younger kids who were very deeply into music and the arts, and everybody was very excited about this interview. And my wife asked me this. With all the stuff going on in the world, mm-hmm. and I won't get into the details, but, you know, we all feel it. We all feel it.
Yeah.
So, Gloria, how do we all survive?
Oh, it's so easy.
Okay.
It's so easy. We're not going to do it, but it's real easy. All you have to do is observe those two simple requests from God. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Love your neighbor as yourself. It's that simple.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Thanks for that. So, Gloria, thanks for taking us through the whole guided tour of the story behind your song, mm-hmm. I Will Survive. What an amazing song that just continues to speak to generation after generation and certainly mm-hmm. shows no sign of slowing down.
No.
You know, and before we leave that, just another thing, it was entered into the Library of Congress
yes.
as one of the most significant songs from a cultural standpoint. Like, how does that feel to be part of, identified as being a singer and one of the most iconic songs of all time?
It is so incredible to think that from where I started, you know, my childhood and all of that, and just, you know, I feel like I've been guided throughout my entire life. And thank God I'm not too stiff-necked that I can't hear and be led. And it's just incredible. It's just incredible. I never thought that I would end up where I am. And I'm just amazed. I'm amazed at God, and I'm amazed at what he can and will do in your life. And I'm sure that if I'd been even more pliable in his hands, I could have done even more. But I'm very happy and pleased with what I've done. And I think I've led a beautiful life, a wonderful life.
Well, listen, as I said at the very beginning, this was one of the interviews that I was most excited about, I've wanted to do for a long time. There are so many great artists that I have interviewed with amazing songs that are iconic, but I can't think of a more universal song in terms of just, you know, we touched upon a little bit about impacting all these different communities across genre and across generation and all around the world. One of the things I saw was that you sang before a crowd of something like 150,000 people in Rio last year.
Yes.
So just sitting back, when you're on stage, do you ever kind of just stop yourself and go, wow, this is insane. This is amazing.
Well, I certainly did at that concert. It was incredible to see all those people and to have all of those people singing so many of my songs with me. You know, it was incredible, wonderful experience, and just so encouraging, uplifting, empowering experience that I'm just so incredibly blessed that I had it.
Yeah, I mean, what an incredible thing that to be in that audience at that time. Okay, so let's get into your new music.
Mm-hmm.
You you know, you've won 2 Grammy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
You've been nominated several times. You've had all these different accolades.
Yeah.
But you won your last Grammy Award win was just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've continued to record music over all the different years, but you have a new EP that's just coming out right now that's called Happy Tears.
Mm-hmm.
And just tell me about going into the studio and thinking about this being the right time for you for this new album and what you wanted to say in this album?
Well, I tell you, this new album is kind of a part of my beyond the survival, a part of the triumph that comes after the survival, the thriving that comes out of the survival. And I Will Survive is still a part of it, because one of the songs was inspired by I Will Survive. I happened to be vocalizing one day with my coach, and when I got to the part of I Will Survive that says, if I'd have known for just 1 second you'd be back to bother me, those words illuminated in my head. It was like bright lights went on, and it didn't say if I had known. It said, if I'd have known, the way we say it, the way we Americans say it. If I'd have known you was stupid, if I'd have known I could do better, you know, and that's what we say. So those words were, and I said to her, I have to write a song with that. She said, with what? I said, if I'd have known. She said, if I had known. I said, no, this is what it said, if I'd have known. It starts with an F. We start with the F, if I'd have known. So we wrote this song, and that's become one of the songs on the new EP, my favorite. And I'm thinking it's going to be everybody's favorite on that.
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear that, too, about the song title. Mm. Because if I'd have known, that wasn't clear to me. And now it's very clear to me, and I love that. That's great.
Because we speak that way unconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, we don't. We don't, you know, you're not spelling out and looking at the, seeing the words as you're saying them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so great new music that's coming up, and Fight Unknown is already out and you can stream it. And it's a wonderful song. It's a wonderful song. And then going from that, and you're touring and you've continuously played, but you're out with the 10-piece orchestra. Mm-hmm. So what is that like after all these years performing on stage? Do you still get the excitement of doing that? Tell us a little bit about the tour. Tell us a little bit about the tour this time and what it means to you.
Well, it means to me to continue sharing not only the surviving, but the thriving and the triumph of my life and the things that have happened to me and the things that I've overcome. To be an example, and hopefully a shining example, of how you can turn lemons into lemonade, you know, and you can take whatever your life is and make it something wonderful and beautiful, if you have the right direction. And of course, I'm a Christian, and my direction comes from Christ. And particularly thinking about that now, as Easter is upon us. And so I just want people to hear this music and be continually uplifted and encouraged by it, because I'm always trying to sing music that is encouraging and empowering.
And just plain fun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Nothing more fun than being empowered. Nothing more fun than feeling like you're on top of your game, that you're on top of the world. That is fun. That's the ultimate fun.
Yeah, it really is. And singing along your songs with a huge crowd is also a lot of fun for everybody in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
And we all need a little bit of that, as you said, so that we all survive. So you have, just recently you had the biopic and the documentary. So those are out right now. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like showing your life and opening up your life on film, on video? Well,
I often say, if you're telling people about your life, about anything that you've done, or anything that you've accomplished, and you're showing them the product, that the ending product, if they're going to emulate you, then they need to see where that came from, how you started with that, how, you know, what were the elements that enabled you to arrive at this wonderful place in your life, or this wonderful product that you're trying to share with them. or whatever. So I've felt that if I could show people, you know, it's wonderful. You have a great life. And people look at you when you have a great life like I have. And when you're on stage and they think that everything was hunky-dory from day one. Yeah. But for them to see the seeds of those flowers that you're sharing with them, see where they came from, see what you went through, see the soil that it was planted in and how you had to cultivate it and nourish it and all of that. If they can see all of that, then they can see how they can do it too. They can see how the difficult times and the awful things that they've gone through in their lives can be overcome and how they can triumph over their difficulties as well. And so I felt it was cathartic for me, and I saw some things that I'd kind of forgotten about. So it was uplifting for me as well to realize, yeah, I came over it. I got over that. I came through that. I did this. I did that. And it was great for me to see that. And I know and I believe that it's going to be that every time somebody sees all of that, they can look back at their lives and say, well, yeah, that's what I went through. And if she can overcome it, she overcame it, I can overcome it too.
Yeah.
You know, and some people have gone through things worse than I've gone through. And some people have gone through things that they thought were worse than I've gone through until they saw my story. Yeah. And I always say everybody has a bestseller if you tell the whole truth.
Yeah.
So, but I just felt like if I can use my life to encourage, uplift, and empower someone else to have triumph and in their lives and come out thriving, then yes, let's do it. So I'm very happy that we did it. I'm pleased with the outcome. I'm pleased with what you know, how it came out, both of them, both the documentary and the docudrama.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've heard great stories from people as that I've accomplished exactly, at least with them, what I hoped to accomplish. So it's as kids say, it's all good.
Yeah. So everybody out there, you can watch those. I think that the biopic is on Lifetime, and you can find the documentary on.
They're both on Lifetime.
They're both on Lifetime. Okay, great. Okay, so I want to ask you a couple lightning round questions before we close up, Gloria. Okay.
Okay.
So, what is something that your fans don't know about you that may surprise them, or is that important to you that you aren't asked about and that are important to you and you would like to discuss?
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily important, but I think maybe a little interesting to my fans. One of the things is that I used to make all of my stage clothes. My mother was a seamstress. And I never sewed while she was alive, but just before she passed away, I'd bought some imitation leather and asked her to make me a dress of it. And she cut it out, but she got sick and passed away and never sewed it. So as I was some months later cleaning up her things, I came across this outfit, this dress that she had cut out. And I decided to try and sew it. I thought, what have I got to lose? I might botch it up, but so what? I throw it away. Anyway, so I put it together and it came out really good and I started sewing. And so I used to make all of my stage clothes.
How about that?
Other thing is that I'm a cook. I'm an old fashioned girl. You know, ladies, years ago, women cooked and they sewed. That was expected of us. And so I cooked and I sewed and so I still cook.
What's your specialty dish?
My specialty dish is called chicken a la Gaynor.
I love it.
and as a matter of fact, Al Roker came to my home once to interview me, and I made it for him, and he talked about it. And recently did a sizzle reel with me for a cooking show that may or may not happen. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
But
you have a lot of projects that are going on, which is great. And like I said, you were just featured on this day that we're recording in a major feature story in the New York Times, which is, you know, just you've had so many features, but nonetheless, being in the New York Times and having like that, that's pretty amazing. So good for you. And Gloria, I really, really enjoyed it. You are such a delightful person, such an inspiration for so many. And the songs just are timeless songs. They're timeless. And that's the, and joyful, which is such a beautiful thing. So thanks for joining The Story Behind the Song.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
That was music legend and queen of disco herself, Gloria Gaynor, sharing her story behind her universal anthem of hope and empowerment, I Will Survive, one of the most iconic recordings of all time. Catch Gloria's great new Happy Tears EP and see her on tour later this year, because this legend never quits. I'm your host, Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media. You can find me at deepcutsmedia.com. Check out all the cool things we do. And if you like my show, please rate it, follow it, and share it with your friends, family, and other music fans like you. New and classic episodes come to you every Monday morning. And make sure to check out all the cool Story Behind the Song merch, including the poster and puzzle I have in my studio in the Consequence merch store at shop.consequence.net. When you get there, be sure to click on the new release tab. And follow the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to The Story Behind the Song.